Hello, and welcome to episode 6 of the East Anglian Theatre podcast. Friends, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. I promise to give them back. This is the 6th exciting instalment of the podcast, and if you don't recognise my voice, my name is Ray Tempesta, and I'm your host. Look upon me as that staff member in a furniture store that approaches you to ask if you'd like assistance, then hangs around even after you've said no, making you feel very awkward. I'm that part that you just have to deal with in order to get what you really want, and in this case, that's the interview with someone far more interesting than me. If you've not been with me since the start, the way the podcast has panned out is that it's split into 3 sections. Section 1 is the part where I go all highbrow and kid myself that my opinion matters as I review a show that I've seen recently. Sometimes I'll even give you a really dull insight into what other theatre-related things I've been up to. Section 2 is the pièce de résistance, as you hear from someone actively involved in theatre in the region currently. And this also provides a welcome relief from my monotonous tones. And section 3, for those that can last that long, is the part where I tell you about some upcoming shows in the region. But first, here's the part where I lie to you and tell you that I'm working on a website for the podcast. Here goes. I'm working on a website for the podcast. Did that sound convincing? No, I'm not surprised. I'm a terrible actor. Anyway, you can keep up to date with some slightly interesting tidbits of information about shows and auditions, etc. by following and liking the East Anglian Theatre Podcast Facebook and Twitter pages. Oh, and here's another lie. It will vastly improve the lives of you and everyone around you if you interact with the social media pages. Now, we've got that boring part out of the way. Here's a slightly less boring part. What have I been up to theatre-wise recently? Well, I went to go and see Shrek the Musical at Cromer Pier Theatre, as performed by Cromer and Sheringham Operatic and Dramatic Society, or CSODS for short. If you've been paying attention, you may remember that I interviewed Joseph Betts a couple of weeks ago, who was playing the part of Shrek in the show. So, what did I think? I asked myself in a slightly odd way. Well, first of all, I'm not a fan of the word amateur when it comes to productions. You see it written on the posters, this amateur production of such and such is licensed by Concord Theatricals. And then you get that awful term amdram, which to me invokes images of a bunch of mates larking about on stage at a community centre with cardboard props and threadbare costumes for the benefit of their family and friends. It's only a word, and perhaps it speaks more about my brittle pride, but to me, the word amateur simply refers to the fact that those in the production are hobbyists, if you will. And in many cases, those that haven't sought to pursue a professional career, but it doesn't always make them any less a performer. And besides which, there is such a potential chasm in the quality of so-called amateur productions, and what I saw at the Cromer Pavilion Theatre served to highlight that. Apart from the restrictions of the stage that they were performing on, everything about the show was professional quality, even down to the standard of the programmes that they produced. But let's get more specific, shall we? We'll start with the 4 lead roles, Shrek, Princess Fiona, Donkey, and Lord Farquaad. Joseph Betts as Shrek was excellent. Knowing him personally and his personality, I think the parts where Shrek was a bit grumpy were a bit of a struggle for him, but he showed Shrek's softer side brilliantly. And the very least I'd expect from Joseph is a fantastic comic performance, and he didn't disappoint. His vocals were great too, and most impressive was his ability to sing in a convincing Scottish accent without it sounding like a send-up, and it really showed his skill as an actor and singer. Dan Smith as Donkey was the crowd pleaser and favourite of the kids watching, and rightly so, as he stepped into what would have been quite a daunting role but pulled it off in style. He's clearly a great physical actor with an instinctive sense for comedy, which made him a lot of fun to watch, but his vocals were outstanding too. Adam Wengrow, as the vertically challenged Lord Farquaad, had the hardest part physically, and I feel for Adam's knees. But every time he appeared on stage, he made it hilarious. He perhaps could have made more of being a baddie, as he wasn't as much of a villain compared to the film version, but I guess given how they made him only 3 feet tall with his ridiculous prop legs, meant he was always going to be more of a comedy character in the stage production. Adam clearly is an excellent comedy actor, though, and his vocals were pretty decent too. Now, I've deliberately left Fiona until last, as I particularly wanted to highlight Emmy Wright's incredible performance. I've only come across Emmy once in the past, when I was involved in a stage production of Maid in Dagenham, where she played Cass. And although it was a decent part, it didn't really give her the chance to shine, certainly not like it did in her turn as Princess Fiona. Emmy's vocals were just exceptional, from the sickly sweet soft stuff at the beginning to the full-on belters later on. She absolutely nailed it throughout, and I was blown away. But there was much more to her performance than just a great set of pipes, and she also showed her skill as a comic actor too. She gave us a glimpse of her tap dancing ability, and obviously uninhibited by mask and makeup as Shrek was, she used her facial expressions to maximum effect. It was an absolutely perfect performance. Now, I'll come round to the production in general, but a few special mentions first. The actors performing as the tap dancing rats were one of my highlights. This was a well-drilled and funny routine, and there wasn't a foot out of place, so well done to them all. There was also an excellent vocal performance from Laura Marvel James as Mama Ogre at the very beginning, and then at the end, Charlotte Drewell as Gingy absolutely tore the roof off the place with her sublime vocals. It was almost a shame that we didn't get to hear more of her, but it was definitely worth the wait. The production in general is largely geared towards children, with a smattering of humour that adults and big kids like myself can enjoy, as was the case with the DreamWorks film. The stage production hovers the line between pantomime and musical, and it was clear the director was keen for it not to be seen as pantomime, as the actors didn't indulge in playing to the crowd, despite some obvious moments where it would have been tempting. For what it's worth, I think that was the right choice, as the show relied on momentum to guide us through various settings, and there was a lot of material to work through. The group made excellent use of very high-quality projection screens, which cut out the need for what would have been some unwieldy set pieces and added a smooth and professional dynamic to the production. The dragon puppet was used well, but also quite sparingly, which, given the tight space on stage, was a relief, I think, as it probably had the potential to make things look a little bit messy with a number of people on stage at the same time. Costumes were all superb, the 12-piece band were excellent, without being overwhelming, and the sound didn't falter once, which, given the number of mics needed, was an absolute miracle. The show was a triumph, and yes, I focused quite heavily on the cast, but to a certain extent, who you have available to cast in a show is sometimes down to luck and timing. However, the production values, which were extremely high, were all down to the production team, and they should be very, very proud of what they've achieved. But now, for the main feature, and I'd like to introduce you all to someone who is possibly the busiest person I know in terms of the sheer number of productions she involves herself in, not to mention all her side hobbies as well. She's recently been appointed as the Joint Creative Director at Sewell Barn Theatre and is currently in the middle of a run of shows at the Sewell Barn in her role as director of a play called Orca. Her name is Sabrina Poole, and she's here with me now. So without further ado, which is a shame because I do so enjoy an ado, here is an interview with Sabrina Poole. Hi, Sabrina. Thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule to talk to me. For those listening, we're recording this at the Sewell Barn Theatre, where Sabrina's currently setting up for another rehearsal. Speaking of the barn, you've recently taken on a new role.
I have.
Can you explain a little bit about it?
Yes. So I am, I'm shadowing for this year, but next season, 2023-2024, I will be the new Joint Artistic Director, along with Cassie Tillett. Essentially, the artistic directors oversee the creative direction of the theatre, and we're there to support the other directors that we bring in for the season. And I'm very, very excited about it.
And dare I ask, what attracted you to the role?
The power. No. To be fair, it felt like a very natural step for me. I think, as you know, I do pretty much everything. And Sewell Barn was the first theatre, sort of this kind of theatre that I came back to after coming back from uni. It's the first place I did a show. And then since then, it was acting, directing, stage managing, tech, front of house, costume, sound design. So when the artistic director position came up, it seemed like a natural thing to sort of step up to.
And it's probably too soon to ask, given that you're currently in rehearsals for Orca. Do you have any immediate thoughts on what your sort of, what kind of mark you want to make on the barn?
So, I mean, I have a very long list of plays that I want to do, and anyone who knows my stuff will know that it tends to be sort of the grittier, the darker stuff. But it is all about balance, and achieving that light and dark. I think anything that I will do, I want to use this space to its full potential. It's an incredibly unique space. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot that can be done with it. So I really want to push that and explore that further.
Yeah. Obviously, it would be silly of me not to ask about Orca. How are the rehearsals? How is the rehearsal going?
Really, really well. Considering all the sort of the obstacles we had to overcome to get here, it's crazy that after waiting 3 years, it's now less than 2 weeks away. But the guys have thrown themselves at it. They've really, really taken on the challenge of this play. It's quite sort of, it's an emotionally challenging play for them. Like, there's a lot going on. There are some beautiful lighter moments, which they smash, but everything is now coming together. The set is, as you've seen, being built. Mm-hmm. And I think, I mean, Miles is an absolute genius. So I'm not going to give too much away, but it is insane. It is going to blow people's minds.
Yeah, it currently looks a bit of a mess at the moment when I've walked in.
Yeah, it's
in.
A bit in pieces. But
Sabrina's assured me it will look much, much better. And so I'll be coming along on whatever the... Something of June. This is your opportunity to throw a plug in.
2nd to the 11th of June.
That's the one. I've done my research, of course. Now, Orca is, well, it is a relatively new play. Obviously, it was even newer at the time when you intended to do it.
Yes.
It was it written by Matt Grinter?
Matt Grinter, yeah, in 2016.
2016, yeah. And although it won an award at the time for new writing, I think it's probably still not that well known. So without giving too much away, can you explain a bit about the play and more specifically why people should come and see it?
Of course. Yeah, so it won the Papatango New Writing Prize, which to anyone who's not familiar with that is an annual writing prize, which, and they have a reputation of finding sort of new and powerful voices, and Orca is no exception to that. It's set on a secluded island, a remote fishing community, and every year they hold a ceremony to bless the waters and protect their fish from the roaming orcas, hence the title. And so every year a girl from the village is chosen, and it centres around Maggie, who was a previous daughter. And the thing is that something happened to Maggie on the boats, but nobody will believe her. Everyone believes she's lying, and it's all about what a community will do to protect their way of life. Mm-hmm. and what the threat is to them. I mean, the tagline of this show is "What makes a community tolerate the unthinkable." So it's a beautiful, beautiful piece. And one review described it as Jaws meets The Wicker Man, which I think is the perfect description of this play.
And based on its location, will we hear any accents?
So we've actually gone with a more universal approach. So one of the other productions did set it in Scotland.
Yeah.
I decided not to. It's not specifically said that it's Scotland. There are certain clues, obviously, and it gives a vibe of perhaps where it is. But we've gone with, because it's a universal story, we've gone with a more universal approach.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't spotted many orcas on the North Norfolk coast.
No, sadly not. Maybe one day.
Yeah, just the odd seal.
Yeah.
Well, that's the promo stuff taken care of, if you like. So let's move on to you, Sabrina.
My favourite subject.
Absolutely. Can you recall your first ever experience in the theatre?
So I was racking my brains about this one. I genuinely can't remember the first time I walked into a theatre, which probably doesn't say very much about my early theatre experiences. I know we went to the Panto when I was sort of 7 till about 12 for my birthday. But the one theatre experience that stuck with me, the first time I was sitting in a theatre and thought, oh my God, this is amazing. I went to see The Woman in Black when I was about 12, 13. Scared the hell out of me. I couldn't sleep without the light on for about 2 weeks. I was terrified. But that was the one theatre experience I've had where nothing's ever topped that. My mind was blown. And I have had an obsession with ghost stories since then. It was perfect piece of theatre as far as I'm concerned.
It's kind of what you want, isn't it, from a theatre show? Exactly. To have that sort of lasting impact on you.
I mean, I haven't seen it again. I don't know if I can handle it. I haven't seen it again since I was that age, but it's still my top theatre experience.
I'd imagine, given how busy your schedule is, you probably find it hard to watch shows in general now.
A little bit.
But do you remember the last show that you watched?
So I did go to see Private Lives at the Theatre Royal, which was very good. Very, very interesting set. This is a problem when you're a director, is you cannot go and watch a play without then start thinking, what can I steal? But that's what it's all about, being inspired. So it was really good, and the set was impressive, and I had a very nice night out.
Despite your annoyingly young age, you've managed to fit in loads and loads of shows, but do you have any particular highlights from the productions that you've been involved with?
I mean, every production's a highlight.
Liar.
I mean, the always the stuff that I did with my own theatre company, Hard Nosed Cow, which is you were very wonderful in the latest one of Hard Nosed Cow's productions. That stuff's always very particularly gratifying because it's, you know, it's my own stuff, it's my own work, and you know, we worked very, very collaboratively to sort of bring something new to the stage. I must admit, in terms of directing, when I was asked to do Wuthering Heights back in 2020, was a huge thing for me to be trusted with that, because I'm a massive Bronte fan. And Jez Pike, who was the artistic director of the Mad Market at the time, offered it to me. And I think we pulled off an amazing production. And then as an actor, when I was, funny enough, another one of Jez is getting involved a lot with this one. He cast me in Boudicca, and as you know, I'm very into my fight training.
Yes.
So I got to fight direct as well as be in that. And that was just everything that I like in a character. I got to be very aggressive and very emotional and carry a sword around. Yeah. So
not a director you want to get on the wrong side of.
Yes, I have a directing sword. Be warned.
Yes, yes. And I mean, naturally, the follow-on question after highs is lows. They can't all be successful for varying reasons, but is there any sort of bad experiences that you've had that you're willing to share?
I mean, you always look back at a show sometimes, especially when you're learning, and go, oh, I wish I'd done that, I wish I'd done this. And I've perhaps in my very, very early years made some interesting casting choices. I'm much better at that now. I cast very well, I think. I remember, though, I was acting in this one. I did a show when I was at uni, a theatre and education piece, which I can't even remember the name of it, but I was playing a sea anemone, and it was all about how we don't bully people. I'm not the best of singers in the world, so that was interesting. We only did the one show because we got cancelled everywhere else because we were so badly organised. And we got to the venue, and the bags we thought were speakers were actually the costumes we thought were lost. So I was suddenly given a new costume. And I had a very big sea anemone hat, which was basically just sparkly green paper. Mm-hmm. And then we had to perform the songs without any speakers. So it was just playing on a laptop off the stage, which you couldn't really hear. So you'd be singing along, realise you were out of time because you could hear it off there. And yeah, interesting couple of months.
I think you've always got to have these bad experiences just to make you appreciate the good ones.
You learn, we learn, we grow.
Now, let's forget about reality for a moment, which, after all, has been quite a dreary day outside.
It has so, been.
Yeah. Don't worry about budget, venues, logistics, and the fact that males are seemingly in short supply in Norwich.
Yes, where are you?
If you could be involved in any show, either as a director or a performer, mm-hmm. or even backstage, you're probably the whole lot, I'm sure. Which would it be?
So if I was acting, my dream, my absolute dream, and if any directors are listening and would like to put this dream into action, I've always wanted to play Elizabeth Bennet in Pride and Prejudice. I am obsessed with Jane Austen, and Pride and Prejudice is my favourite, and I love it. So if I could act in anything, it would be Pride and Prejudice. If I was going to direct, it's going to have to be Woman in Black, isn't it? It's just going to have to be that one. I don't think anyone's getting their hands on those rights for many, many years. But maybe when I'm like 90, they might give me a chance. But yes, they say so. Pride and Prejudice and Woman in Black, which I don't think you can get more different.
Yeah, very polar opposites, aren't they? I've come across you in various guises in the theatre as an actor, a director, a writer, a stage manager. Probably did lighting, props and sound, I'd imagine, as well.
I'm always in the background
just
doing something.
Just everything. Is there any of those roles that you prefer?
So, you know, I've been asked this question several times, and I always bounce back and forth depending on what mood I'm in, but I do always come back to directing. I think the thing is, I like the control. No, I like to be in control. No, I like, I'm a very sort of ideas-oriented person, and funny enough, I like the stress. I like having a million things that need to get done and working out how they're going to pull together. And for me, it's the most important thing is to create experiences that, you know, people enjoy, that people remember. And even when you're, here at, you know, 11 o'clock on, you know, the day before we open and we need to sort something out and it's really stressful and you're tearing your hair out, that's still an amazing experience to be part of. And people hopefully remember it for the right reasons. And also I kind of, yeah, I have a very particular sort of style that I like to go for. So I'm always gonna come back to directing.
As you alluded to a little bit earlier, we last worked together on the play that you'd written yourself,
yes.
The Innocence That Time Stole.
Oh, yes.
But do you have any further plans to write more shows and produce? Well, that was with Hard Nosed Cow. I mean, I don't know what their sort of the rules are with Sewell Barn in terms of crossover with your own stuff.
Well, you never know. I mean, the Sewell Barn is always, you know, we're a community theatre, so it's always important for us to open these opportunities as much as possible. It might be a step too far for me just to start putting on my own shows as artistic director, but you never know. I do have a plan to do another Hard Nosed Cow show in possibly November, which is possibly going to be a one-woman show, which I'm going to write and act in. We're going to play around with the streaming element. Obviously, we did a little bit of that before, and that was quite popular. And we do have some audience members who are in sort of America and Australia who still want to support us. So we're just going to have a little bit of a play with a style. It's going to be more of an experimental piece. So we're just going to see how that goes. And then hopefully next year we can step it up a notch, because I've been a bit busy.
Yeah.
She says taking on artistic director role. I'm always going to be busy, but...
Well, speaking of busy, that's probably all you've got time for, not me. But yes, I'll leave you to finish setting up for rehearsal and get your best director face on.
It's always on. Thank yes. you, Ray.
No, thank you. So there we have it. That was Sabrina Poole, who, in summary, is a thoroughly busy woman. Now, I have to make a couple of apologies to Sabrina for, well, first of all, I introduced her as the joint creative director, when in fact she's the joint artistic director. I'm sure no one would have noticed, and there probably isn't even a difference, but I thought I'd clarify in case it seemed like I was just making stuff up in the intro. Also, due to my poor organisational skills, this episode has gone out a few days into the run of her show, Orca. However, you can catch the remaining shows from the 8th to the 11th of June at the Sewell Barn Theatre in Norwich. Oh, and there's also a matinee show on the Saturday. Do check it out, as the reviews so far have been excellent, with comments including powerful stuff, emotionally charged, and another brilliant Sabrina Poole production with her trademark ingenious set designs. Tickets are available from sewellbarn.org.uk. Now, what else is coming up in the region in the next week or two? Well, staying relatively close to Norwich, Rackheath Players are performing a comedy called Stand and Deliver by Janet Shaw at Rackheath Village Hall. It's set in a maternity ward and gives you a hilarious insight into the trials and tribulations of childbirth, and it's on from the 16th to the 18th of June. Moving over to North Norfolk, and Stage Direct are producing the hit comedy 1 O'Clock from the House, which will be on at Sheringham Little Theatre from the 16th to the 18th of June also. It's described as a scorching comedy of personalities and revolves around the funeral of an elderly father. Best of all, it's a fundraiser for the little theatre itself, so it's well worth popping along. Over in Bungay, the Fisher Youth Theatre are staging a production of Be More Chill. It's a thoroughly modern rock, pop and funk musical based on a novel by Ned Vizin. It's a teenage love story with a comical twist. Guy wants to fit in, girl wants to be noticed, and a supercomputer inside the guy's head that tells him what to do. Classic story. It's on at the Fisher Theatre in Bungay from the 16th to the 18th of June with a Saturday matinee. Staying in Suffolk, and the Sudbury Dramatic Society are looking for performers to join their cast for their September production of Anne Boleyn. There's a number of both male and female roles available, and they're inviting people to audition on Monday the 13th of June at the Key Theatre in Sudbury. And finally, over in Cambridge, Cottenham Theatre Workshop's next Christmas spectacular will be an adaptation of The Nutcracker, and they're looking for people to get involved. There's an initial read-through in late June with auditions to follow after, and there's lots of roles available for all age ranges. As always, I'll post links to the shows mentioned on the East Anglian Theatre Podcast Facebook and Twitter pages. And as I always say, if anyone would like to get in touch with me to let me know about any upcoming shows that they'd like to promote or even speak about on future episodes of the podcast, please do feel free to get in touch. And that, everyone, wraps things up on this 6th episode of the East Anglian Theatre Podcast. Thanks so much for listening to me and Sabrina ramble on. And tune in next time to hear another interview with someone equally wonderful and a review of A Chorus Line by Threshold Theatre. In the meantime, take care of yourselves and go watch some theatre. Bye.